Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop from Washington. I'm your host, Mark Levine, reporting live from the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C. on a rainy Thursday just before Christmas. I hope you're having a nice holiday season. Today is the day, I think, when you try to get everything done by, right? Next week, it's Christmas week, and the next week after that, between Christmas and New Year's, and this week, you kind of want to be done by Friday. So today is your busy, get it all done day. And I've had a pretty busy day myself, actually. Most of you know I have been elected to serve the people of Alexandria, Arlington, and Fairfax in the Virginia State Legislature down in the state capitol in Richmond. And I will be sworn in January. So this is my last month on the air. I'll be here through the end of the year, but then you're going to have to wait probably till the beginning of April. Our sessions last about 3 months. So if you haven't had a chance to call in and talk with me yet, please, I encourage you to do so. Call in at 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. I'm going to be talking about the Republican debates in just a minute. Before I do that, though, I do want to share with you a little bit of what I've been doing, just so you get an idea of what a freshman legislator is going through, and we'll have a chance to talk about that a little bit more before the end of the year. But I just spent hours and hours and hours and hours yesterday and the day before, probably a total of, I don't know, I can't count that high, 14, 15 hours, seems like, going through 27 judicial candidates to determine one judge to be put on the bench in Arlington and five on the bench in Fairfax County. And this is really important, really cool. It's amazing. Now, it's not just my decision. Obviously, I share that decision with fellow legislators who serve either Arlington or Fairfax or both, like I do. But to go through and to hear so many terrific candidates and to really try to figure out what would be best for someone walking into their courtroom. I want a judge that is understanding, a judge that is empathetic. I don't want a judge that's imperious. Tone matters. And people are scared, usually, when they arrive in a courthouse. Either they've been accused of some crime, or they are maybe divorcing their spouse and maybe have a custody fight over children. Maybe they're seeking relief because they're a victim of domestic violence. Maybe they are suing someone because they feel they've been wronged. Maybe they are being sued and feel they've done that wrongly. The point is that nobody comes to court for fun. People come to court in times of intense stress, whether through their family or their business or for some crime that they were alleged to have committed, or maybe they did commit. And it was really interesting for me to sit back and hear some very, very good candidates. And we really had a lot of very good candidates. I'm very proud of the wealth of good candidates that we had. That's what made the decision so tough. But just if people want to know how I made my decision, I basically imagined someone who didn't know much about the court system. Maybe they don't speak English. Maybe they have never been in court before. Certainly non-lawyers, people who are too poor to afford a lawyer. And they're scared, and just which judge would make them feel best, while at the same time, of course, applying the law and being very fair and showing mercy as well as justice and being hard when you need to be hard and being soft when you need to be soft. It's a terrific, awesome responsibility judging your fellow man or woman, and it's one that requires, I think, a certain humility. And all I can say is that I think the delegation chose some very good judges, it was an awesome responsibility to be part of that process. If you want to talk about that, feel free to call in. I want to move on, though, to another topic, which is the Republican debate, which was Tuesday night. Yesterday, I decided to take a break from politics and talk about science. If you heard that show, it was amazing. I learned more about physics, I think, in the last hour yesterday than I had in, many, many, many years about black holes. And if you're interested in that topic, it's all on my website, marklevinetalk.com. But I put off for a day talking about the Republican debate because I had that science guest scheduled for yesterday. But I was amused, one part amused and three parts disturbed by the Republican debate that I saw. And I'd be curious to know what you thought of it. I'd be curious to know if even you watched it. I think because the topic was not economics, because the topic was not some of the things that most of us care a lot about, it was entirely on, I would say foreign policy, but it wasn't even on foreign policy. It was entirely on terrorism. The whole 2+ hours, and if you watch the undercard debate, 5 hours or so on CNN, which I watched, so you don't have to, was about terrorism and the fight against ISIS. And most of the Republican candidates just didn't get it. The first thing I think they didn't get, and this is true of every single one of them, is the scope of the problem. It's fascinating to me that as troubling and horrific and terrible as it is, that 14 innocent Americans were gunned down by two terrorists in San Bernardino and 17 wounded, that those 14 Americans' deaths mattered, and mattered severely, mattered enough to send thousands of men and women off to war, possibly tens of thousands, possibly more, probably lead to hundreds, if not thousands, of deaths of our servicemen and women, not to mention how many, not just enemy terrorists we plan to kill, but also innocent people accidentally killed. This was, well, I think one candidate called it World War III. Forget which one that was. This was red alert. It's fascinating to me because this was, according to all the commentators, the most serious terrorist attack since September 11th, they said. Now, I understand the anger and rush to war after September 11th. I get that. 3,000 Americans brutally murdered. The Twin Towers come tumbling down. The Pentagon, our great army office building, our center of our military power, attacked. That sure seemed like war. I get that. And not that I don't mourn the 14 that were ruthlessly, brutally, senselessly murdered in San Bernardino. But on the same day that 14 people were senselessly murdered in San Bernardino in the single worst terrorist attack since September 11th, 2001, the worst terrorist attack in 14 years... on that same day, another 80 innocent Americans were gunned down. You didn't hear their names. They weren't all in one place. They were all across the country. Of that 80 or 90, about a third, let's say 30, or twice the amount killed in San Bernardino, were murdered. Brutally murdered. Twice the number killed in San Bernardino were murdered in America by guns that same day. And every day. Every single day in this calendar year. And I know that because I know that each and every year, more than 10,000 Americans are murdered by a gun. That's just 30 of the 80. Or 90 killed in addition to the San Bernardino deaths. Another 50 or so committed suicide with guns. They killed themselves because they had a gun readily available. If they hadn't had a gun readily available, they might have tried to knife themselves or cut their wrists, and they likely would have survived, and these people who tried to kill themselves would likely have sought and succeeded in getting help. And then another 15 or so, the same day as San Bernardino, were killed entirely by accident by guns. Some four-year-old finds a gun and pulls the trigger. Some person without gun training doesn't realize that when you empty the bullets out of a handgun, there's still one in the chamber. It's not empty. Some child went to school with a gun and it went off. Somebody put a gun in their pants and it went off. So, 14 people died in San Bernardino. And 8 times that number died at the hands of guns. And the only thing Republicans would talk about were the 14 dead in San Bernardino. For those people, we would go to war. For those people, we would lose another several hundred, if not thousand, lives. For those people, we would pay $1 trillion. For those people, no stone would be unturned. We would go to the Middle East, invade a number of countries, try to remake the entire world for the sake of those 14. But those 14 weren't even killed by ISIS, folks. They weren't killed by the terrorist group that has brutally established a so-called caliphate in areas of Iraq and Syria. No, they were killed by an American and his Saudi-born wife who was inspired by ISIS. Inspired by ISIS. Think about that. A couple months ago, a young, disturbed white man was inspired by the Confederacy, inspired by the Confederate flag, inspired probably by the Ku Klux Klan. He went into a black church and he gunned down 9 innocent people. And that terrorist has not caused us to go to war against white people worldwide, has not caused us to go to war against the remains of the Confederacy in the United States, has not caused us to put people who wave Confederate flags on no-fly lists. Why not? Do we not care about the 9 killed in the black church in Charleston? San Bernardino, they say, was the worst terrorist attack since September 11th. I beg to differ. I'd say the worst terrorist attack happened in Newtown, Connecticut, where 26 people, mostly children, were gunned down by a madman with a gun, or I don't remember how many died in the theater in Aurora, Colorado. What was it, a dozen the day Gabby Giffords was shot in Tucson, Arizona? How many died in Umpqua, Oregon? You see, San Bernardino, compared to all the other gun deaths in America, is a footnote. It's an asterisk. More people were murdered than died in San Bernardino by guns that day by noon. And yet, when asked about gun violence, the standard Republican response, in the words of Jeb Bush, is, stuff happens. 30,000 Americans dead. My friends, we only lost 50,000 in Vietnam. 33,000 Americans dead by gun violence every single year. That stuff happens. But 14 killed by a Muslim, it's time to go to war. 26 killed by a disturbed white boy in Connecticut, we shed our tears for Newtown. 14 killed by a disturbed Muslim man in California, and it's time to go to war. Can't anyone see this is a problem? That maybe we shouldn't be spending trillions of dollars to go to war to save 14? Maybe we should spend $1 million, or less than that, on background checks in America? It would cost a lot less. It would save a lot more lives. We wouldn't have to go to war. This is Mark Levine. Give me a call. 888-48-MARK. 888-488-6275. Right back after this. Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. One of the things that defined the debate yesterday, I thought, was Chris Christie's opening remarks. It's not something that I think many people noticed. Most people were focused on the normal atmospherics between Donald Trump and everyone else. But before I take your calls, let me just quickly play for you how Chris Christie began his debate and why I think he's so off. Let's play the clip.
America has been betrayed. We've been betrayed by the leadership that Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton have provided to this country over the last number of years. Think about just what's happened today. The second largest school district in America, in Los Angeles, closed based on a threat. Think about the effect that that's going to have on those children when they go back to school tomorrow, wondering, filled with anxiety about whether they're really going to be safe. Think about the mothers who will take those children tomorrow morning to the bus stop, wondering whether their children will arrive back on that bus safe and sound. Think about the fathers of Los Angeles who tomorrow will head off to work and wonder about the safety of their wives and their children. What has Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton done to this country? That the most basic responsibility of an administration is to protect the safety and security of the American people. I will tell you this, I'm a former federal prosecutor, I fought terrorists and won, and when we get back in the White House, we will fight terrorists and win again, and America will be safe.
Whoa, Chris Christie, hang on there, sir. This is, first of all, this is Obama and Hillary Clinton's fault, and second of all, children will be scared, mothers will be scared, fathers will be scared, the whole Los Angeles school system was shut down. Why was the whole Los Angeles school system shut down? Because of a threat? I mean, did they threaten to bomb every school in Los Angeles, all thousands of schools in Los Angeles? Why was it shut down? And what's the threat? The threat isn't that ISIS is going to come and gun down our kids. No, the threat is that a crazy man in Newtown, Connecticut is going to come in your school and gun down your kids. And if you want to be concerned about something, that's far more likely, and Chris Christie would do nothing to stop it. Why is this on Obama and Hillary? September 11th killed 3,000 Americans, and that's on Republican George W. Bush. For all the talk about foreign policy, you're blaming one man in San Bernardino who is inspired by a vicious terrorist group for causing the entire city of Los Angeles to have fear? But the 33,000 gun deaths across America, including at least 1,000 in L.A., that doesn't scare anybody? Chris Christie, do you hear what you're saying? Because you're speaking for the whole Republican Party here. Yes, we're viciously scared when a Muslim kills a dozen Americans, but we don't care when Americans kill 30,000? I'll be right back after this. Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. Watch the entire Republican debate. We'll be playing clips, a few more clips from it a little bit later on in the hour. But I was struck by the fact that many of those Republicans are ready to go to war, ready to send tens of thousands of servicemen and women to fight in a country far away where it's a colossal mess. And frankly, I myself think we should have done something sooner, many years ago. Right now it's even harder to do something. But that wasn't so much to protect American lives as it was to try to stop the hundreds of thousands of Syrians being murdered there. But the point is, that's not why Republicans want to go to war against ISIS. They want to go to war against ISIS because some American Muslim man was inspired by ISIS's brutal rhetoric and came in with a gun and murdered 14 people. Yeah, they want to go to war and bomb the heck out of ISIS because of this man. But you know what they don't want to do? They don't want to deny terrorists weapons in the United States. To keep the guy from killing in San Bernardino, we could either take away his gun, so that he can't buy a semi-automatic weapon of mass destruction. We could punish people who buy him weapons, as apparently a friend and neighbor of his did. That's relatively cheap. Or we could go to war in the Middle East, try to kill hundreds of thousands of people in the hopes that maybe we can squash an ideology, a system of thought, merely by killing people so they don't inspire people in the United States, and believe that by killing all these Muslims over in Syria and Iraq, that will somehow not inspire American Muslims to kill us at the cost of $1 trillion or so. Which strategy do you think makes the most sense? Make it harder for people who are dangerous to own guns in America? Or go to World War III in the hopes that people won't be inspired to kill more? Do the Republicans even hear themselves? Let me talk to Trevor in Massachusetts and see what he thinks about all of this. Hey, Trevor, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on your show again real quick.
Yeah, thanks for calling in.
You said a lot, and I want to tie it all together from my perspective and how I see it. I want
okay.
to start by saying fear is a mind killer, and that's what terrorism is. It's designed to give everybody make everybody fearful and make them escape their original principle.
Well, then ISIS has succeeded with the Republican Party, haven't they?
Yeah, definitely, and that debate was very telling in some of the clowns that are in the Republican Party and some of the ways they are using fear to make Americans not consider their original intent, what you know, things we're moving away from. There are some bedrock principles of law in America: innocent until proven guilty, the First Amendment, freedom of religion and assembly. And we're now at the point where we have, on both sides of this debate, we have people openly saying we should not have Muslims come in the country.
Yeah, I'm not saying Americans. That.
I know you're not, and openly saying this, what you are saying, that we should take away people's rights when they haven't been convicted of anything. That's what the terrorist watch list would be.
Yes. Well, by the way, in terms of the terrorist watch list, Andrew, I mean, Trevor, do you believe that we should even have a no-fly list, a terrorist watch list? Should we have a list of people that the federal so to get on the watch list, just to remind people who may not know, the FBI goes through and culls through everything from your communications to who you talk with, who you associate with, things you've said, like you say, you know, I want to kill a bunch of Americans, things like that, or you declare allegiance to a foreign terrorist group, and they'll put you on this watch list, this no-fly list. You can get off if they have the wrong person, if you know, it's Trevor Smith, I don't know your last name, but you don't have to tell me, but rather than Trevor Jones, whatever it is, they got the wrong guy, then you can get off. You say, hey, you wouldn't let me fly, I can get off, and then you apply to get off this list. But do you think, Trevor, they should keep this list at all?
I think they should keep the list, but listen to how it's applied. Not letting somebody fly is not letting somebody participate in commerce. You're talking to a company who runs airplanes and saying this person might not be on the list. That's not taking a right from a person.
So you're fine with telling someone they can't fly home for Christmas, but you're not fine with telling them they can't buy an AR-15?
Yes, I'm not fine with that, because now you're applying a judgment. Now, you yesterday spent your time I'm screening people who will be judges, who have the authority vested in you from the people.
Right.
People have elected you. You can decide a judge. A judge can decide if somebody should face some punishment.
That's true.
If we are moving away from that because you're afraid that somebody might get shot, then you're just like terrorists.
Trevor, help me out here, because I really want to understand. Trevor, help me out. I want to understand your point of view. You do support the no-fly list. So let's say a horrible terrorist, an ISIS terrorist, okay, flies on an airplane. To get on the plane, he's got to go through security. He can't carry any weapons on him. His baggage will be checked for explosives. What's the worst he could do on a plane? Here's how I see it. He could take that little plastic knife that goes with your food and try to harm someone with that. He could, with his bare hands, if he's strong, he could strangle someone or punch someone out. That he could do, no question. I think if that happened, he would be restrained by passengers pretty quickly. But let's just say you can kill someone with your bare hands. It's really hard to kill two people with your bare hands. And I think that's about the limit that he could possibly do on a plane. Why won't you let him fly? Why won't you let him fly?
I'm saying you can prevent him from flying because that's an interaction, commercial interaction between him and the airplane.
Yeah, but so why should I prevent? But he can only kill one or two people. What's the danger of him flying?
You can use that list to say if you're on a terrorist watch list, you can't put an editorial in the New York Times.
You can't do that. You can't do that. That's a First Amendment right.
You can't use that list to say you can't buy a gun.
But you know what? Here's the thing. Right, if somebody puts an editorial in the New York Times, Trevor, hang on. If someone puts an editorial in the New York Times, Trevor, it might cause me heartburn. But that's about the worst physical distress I'll face. If I let a terrorist on a plane, they might, and it would be really hard to do, but maybe with their bare hands they could kill one person. But that's about the worst they can do. But you give a guy an AR-15. Hey, let me finish, Trevor, and then I'll let you make your point all you want. You give a guy an AR-15, a semi-automatic military-grade weapon, and with thousands and thousands of rounds, which this guy was armed with, you let him buy that even though he's on the terrorist watch list, and suddenly he can kill hundreds of people. It strikes me that if you're going to allow that, there's no need for a no-fly list. I mean, the damage they can do in the air is far, far less than the damage the guy can do on the ground with a semi-automatic weapon. Isn't that right?
You are right, but I think I've made my point about why you couldn't apply a terrorist watch list to somebody's right to buy a weapon. Now let's talk about.
Well, I don't think you have a right to buy a weapon. Let me just full stop. I don't think you have a right to buy a weapon in America. You do not have a right to, unless you are serving in a well-regulated militia. My Second Amendment says you have no right to bear arms except in a well-regulated militia. I realize that five guys
that's
in black robes.
Excellent transition.
I realize that five guys in black robes 5 years ago changed 230 years of American law and said any old crazy person can buy any old weapon and kill anyone they want. I think the Supreme Court should read the entire Second Amendment and not just the second half of it, which they like. So I strongly disagree with that opinion. And to say that we're going to risk thousands, tens of thousands of American lives because five guys in robes don't know how to read strikes me as the wrong thing to do. And I'll let you go from there.
So let me tell you why it's not and why it's absolutely the right thing to do. The 14 people, God rest their souls, that were killed in San Bernardino.
Yeah.
I agree with you. Correctly point out how that is used as fear, where the whole country wants to move. On, of course they don't, but people want to move the whole country because of this terrorism and fear.
One candidate said World War III.
Exactly. I disagree with that wholeheartedly, and it's folly. And I say that the Constitution, when I read it, says, we pay taxes for the common defense and general welfare.
Right.
Common defense. I agree.
See,
making sure a foreign country doesn't have a nuclear weapon to attack us. Making sure a foreign army doesn't invade us.
Right.
Common defense doesn't mean protecting me from a terrorist with an AK-47. That's not common defense. That's personal defense. I have to be able to protect me from that.
Well, and but we have police officers trying
to
protect you.
I have to be able to buy a gun. Say again?
But Trevor, are you a member of a police force or a military? Are you ex-military? Are you?
I am not.
Okay. So here's my point. Police and military have training. They know how to deal with very, very difficult, very tough situations. When a terrorist comes in with a gun and starts shooting people, they know what to do and how to do it. Most of us, without training, they've done tests. We go in where you know.
Personal defenses against anything. I'm not just talking terrorists. Let's make it very visceral. And I don't wish this on you, but if somebody were to attack you on the street and punch you in the face, you don't call the cops and wait for somebody to come defend you. You know, you defend yourself.
Sure, or I run. I'd probably call 911 as soon as I could. But listen, if somebody's bigger than me and punches me in the face, what's that?
I said you would have to wait until after you got beat up. You have to defend yourself.
Sure.
And a handgun, a rifle, those things are personal defense weapons.
But here's the problem, Trevor.
You would have a weapon to defend against.
Here's the thing. If we have no weapons, then probably the bigger, stronger guy wins the fight. Okay, so a bigger, stronger guy comes after me. Well, I got a handgun, so now I can beat him. But if I have a handgun and he has an AR-15, well, he's gonna win the fight. But wait a minute, if I have a tank and he has an AR-15, then I'm gonna win the fight for personal defense. But if I have a tank and he has a plane that drops bombs on me, Well, you know what? Well, he's going to win. But hey, if I have nuclear weapons, you see where it goes? There is no way in personal defense you're always going to be stronger. Someone can always outarm you. And my question is, why draw the line? We draw the line right now. We allow AR-15s. We don't allow tanks. Instead of drawing the line there, we could draw the line and say, you know what? You can only have mace or pepper spray, which seems kind of a reasonable place to draw the line. Why do we have to draw the line to allow military-grade weaponry in the hands of terrorists?
I love debating with you. Can I say this last point about—
You go right ahead, Trevor. I like debating with you, too, even though we disagree.
I think it was especially telling that Donald Trump did not know what the triad was.
I noticed that too.
He did not understand.
I know.
He would fail the background test for whether you should have a gun. You don't even know how bullets work.
I know.
I just wanted to get that in. That violence is the problem, and if you're going to command violence, you have to understand how it works.
But how about Trevor, if we allow everybody to carry mace on the streets? It's not a great thing, but it's enough to probably prevent a rape or someone much stronger than you. And if they grab your mace and use it against you, you're not going to die. That seems to me, that's about the limit that I think, unless you're a trained police officer, trained military person, trained security guard, at that point I'm willing to give you tougher weapons. But does that make, because if, without training, I don't want people carrying guns all around me. I don't trust them. They've got no training.
Here's my response to that. We probably have different experiences about this, but I'm of the opinion that anything a police officer can have, because he's a citizen just like me, I should be able to have.
He's not a citizen just like you,
Trevor. If I'm walking around with mace, then Trevor, the police officers will be abusing me.
The police is not... are not citizens just like you any more than the President of the United States is a citizen just like you. The police have the power.
I'm a public school teacher and a police officer is a public employee. Just
yes,
like
I understand, but they have the power to use force legally against you to stop a crime. You don't have the power to use force.
I have the power to use force legally to protect myself. What's the difference between the two of us?
Because the police, they have training, they have supervision. They are someone who can be fired. They are someone who can get their gun and badge taken away. They're someone you can file a complaint against. They have to go to school. They have to learn what they're doing. And they don't do a good job. They're fired. And frankly, they're held to a higher standard in the criminal law, too. They can be, police make split-second decisions and can be charged with murder. So they're not just like you or me any more than the president's just like you or me.
They are not held to the highest standard.
Well, they should be. Okay, but they should be. They should be.
We need to get rid of the myth that they are greater than the average citizen.
It's not that they're greater. No. It's not that they're greater. It's that they play a different role. Okay? I mean, you as a school teacher can walk into that public school without anyone asking you any questions. If I try to walk into your public school, someone will probably say, "Hey, Mark, what are you doing here?" And I'll be like, "I just wandered in." And they'll be like, "Well, that's a little weird." I mean, there are people who are allowed behind the safety mechanisms in a factory because they know what they're doing. The police have certain roles in our society that they've been trained to do. You, Trevor, can become a police officer, absolutely. And listen, police officers can be taken down. They should be if they're corrupt. If they're wrong, they can be charged with a crime. There's a role for a DA. There's a role for judges. There's a role for state legislators. There's a role for the President of the United States. But we are all equal, but we have different roles to play.
Are police officers the only one allowed to defend themselves?
No.
Because I shouldn't have to be trained to defend myself.
No. And that's everyone has the right of self-defense. But I'll tell you something.
That's what I'm saying. They're not different than me.
Well, everyone has the right of self-defense. But if a non-police officer, puts a gun on me and says, "Stand still," I might just knock him out or try to run. If a police officer pulls his gun out of me and says, "Stand still," you damn right I'm standing still. Because I know that this is an officer of the law and someone that I should try to obey unless I'm actually physically getting beat up. Because
I had to teach this to my children. They thought that police officers had guns to make you obey the law. A police officer has a gun to defend himself. The same reason I have a gun.
Well, the good police officer also has a gun to defend. They also have a gun to defend others. They can shoot someone who's about to shoot someone else, sure. They can shoot someone.
So can I. Police officers don't have to defend others.
That's their responsibility. Police officers. No, but police officers drive toward a shooting, whereas the rest of us should drive away from it. They have training. They go toward the problem.
By law, they don't have to defend me.
Sure, they do. Protect and serve.
A police officer has a gun to defend himself.
And you.
So do
and
I.
The entire community. That I'm not telling you every police officer does their job. Please don't get me wrong. But that's still their job, and it's something
they
should do.
The Supreme Court's ruling on it. The Supreme Court has ruled police don't have to run into danger to defend you. Your defense is on you.
I don't think that's right. I think police officers absolutely have to run into danger to save others. Now, they shouldn't do it if they don't have backup, but absolutely. Who do you think responds to these mass shootings and succeeds? It's not ordinary citizens. It's police. It's security guards. It's trained people.
You can't kill a police officer for not protecting you from getting mugged. You can't.
If a police officer sees you getting mugged and doesn't come and save you, that police officer will be out of a job lickety-split.
You can't get sued.
But you can get them fired lickety-split, and they'll lose their job and their badge and their gun. Hey, I got to go, Trevor. I do enjoy debating with you. We'll be right back with more calls right after this. Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. Just a few minutes left, but I do want to get to another caller on the line. It's Rod from New Jersey. Hey, Rod, how are you?
Yes, good afternoon, Mark. I wanted to mention some things very quickly about Chris Christie, Russia, and China.
Yeah.
And basically, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. You got the floor.
Okay. In today's copy of the Record, this is a paper that serves northeastern New Jersey. Two headlines, Whitman blasts GOP candidates, and Christy Whitman, who was governor of New Jersey, Republican
right.
governor of New Jersey, and Ronald Reagan's, I did not forget what it, you know, but basically she was the head of the Environmental Protection
EPA.
Agency.
Right, environment, right.
A little bit to the left, yeah, a little bit to the left of Reagan. And she thinks the Republican Party has drifted way, way too far to the right. And she's hoping that the candidate, whoever he is, goes down in flames. And maybe this will teach the Republicans not to be such extremists.
You know, maybe she should have run. She would have been a reasonable candidate, actually. She, like you say, she worked for Ronald Reagan. She was governor of New Jersey. And she is, I have to admit, a reasonable, rational person, even if she's a Republican. They have nobody like her. Absolutely nobody like her. Would have been interesting had she.
The other thing is that it appears so far as the George Washington Bridge scandal, there's an article in here. Judge Riff's inquiry into GWB scandal chastises lawyers hired by Christie for destroying notes. So there's a possibility there. You know, it's too complicated to go into here. But,
right. No. I think Christie's in real trouble. I don't think he has a chance. My point was not that Christie is any threat. My point was that he typifies. I mean, what he said was actually calmer than what some of the other ones said on the stage. And so he typifies real problem Republican Party. Thanks for your call, Rod. I appreciate it. Going out, I just want to play real briefly. Andrew, play that clip, the 50-second clip that we had to show the chaos in the Republican Party.
Secure the border, and this also goes to trust. Listen, on campaign trails, candidates all the time make promises. You know, Marco said he learned that the American people didn't
Senator
trust
Cruz,
the federal government.
No, Dana,
he campaigned in Florida
Ted
promising to lead the fight against
Ted
amnesty.
Support legalizing
he campaigned promising
illegally.
To lead the fight against
Ladies
amnesty.
Ladies and gentlemen,
and
this
exactly
is why
Dana,
Senator Cruz,
this is
can you answer
point.
That question, please?
Okay. Does Ted Cruz rule out ever legalizing people that are in this country illegally now?
Senator Cruz?
I have never supported legalization.
Do you rule it out?
I have never supported legalization, and I do not intend to support legalization. And let me tell you how you do this. What you do is you enforce the law. What you do is you enforce the law.
We have been talking about this
Ms.
for 25
please
years.
Wait your turn. We're going to get to you on this. Go
Sorry,
ahead, Senator
you haven't
Cruz.
Gotten to me. This is why I'm fed up with the political class.
That's the cacophony of the Republican Party.